Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the haunted Stimson Hospital. In 1870, in Eaton Rapids, Michigan, construction began on a private home, a mansion, that would later become the Stimson Hospital. In 1917, Harriet Chapman purchased the home and turned it into a hospital. She brought in two doctors, Doctors Stimson and Blanchard, to help run it. More than 3,000 children were born within its walls, and countless others died, including all three of the hospital's founders died there. In fact, Dr. Blanchard fell to his death in the hospital's elevator shaft, and it seems all three founders have never left. There are reports of strange noises coming from the basement, objects moving by themselves, and disembodied voices. Children who have lived there speak of an imaginary friend, and the odd thing is, all the children mentioned the same name of this imaginary man, Blanchard. On this episode of The Grave Talks, the haunted Stimson Hospital with owner Chris Sturgill.
So if you go to the Facebook page, Stimson Hospital, go to the videos page. The last one I posted was something that happened that was really just freaking weird. We've been having some poltergeist activity in the round room, which actually used to be the porch of the old hospital. And so I was down, I have a laser engraver that I do artwork and stuff on. And so I was opening up a package of wood to get ready for the, to do some more burns on some stuff. And I walked away from the table to get like something to cut the tape on. And as I was walking back, a small piece of metal on the right-hand side of the table just kind of flopped over all by itself. And I was still like 3 foot away from the table. And I heard it, but I didn't see it because it was on the periphery of my vision. So I stopped and say, well, what the hell was that? And so I started reaching around the table and I picked up a tape measure that was there because, well, it's metal. And then I reached over and looked at the piece of metal and said, well, that wasn't sitting like that. Okay, whatever, you know. And so I start opening the wood again because you get used to this shit, you know.
You are exactly describing what I'm watching.
Right.
It's funny. So I'm standing there.
And as I'm standing there, a small aluminum scalpel by my left hand, right behind the side of the wood, jumps a foot and a half across the table all by itself and lands on a pile of slate coasters that I was going to engrave. I mean, it's aluminum, and it jumped onto a bunch of rocks. And I looked at that and said, what the fuck was that? And so I kind of picked it up, looked at the scalpel, set it down outside, and then went right back about my business because, again, you get used to this shit. So I go upstairs, talk to Pam, who was upstairs watching TV and just off the birthing room. And I says, man, the weirdest fucking shit just happened down in the laser room. And I mean, shit was moving. And she says, well, did you check the security cameras? I go, I didn't, but well, I'm going to now. And so sure as shit, it was aimed right at it. And I caught every little bit of that. And it only takes like 26 seconds. But what I did is I went back over it and I zoomed in on the part where it moved. And I made like little bubbles where it zoomed in. You know how you see some videos too. So you have to watch it like two or three times to see what you're watching because it's so fast. Yeah. You need to watch that, and then you'll get an idea of what I'm talking about. But
no,
honestly,
I'm looking at it
very
right
first
now.
Video. Yeah, and if you watch it, it's like, wow. And I mean, and that shit happens. And I walked in here and found all the folding chairs just thrown all over the floor, all upside down and shit. And it's like, why didn't I even fucking hear this? That are metal folding chairs. You know, you should be able to hear that. But no, just all over the place.
Can you describe the building and what it looks like? It was built in 1870 originally.
Yep. So it was actually finished in 1874. Now, Pam and I used to drive up here and just go to a little pottery place down the road. So we'd drive by this building every time. And as you're driving down the road, you kind of happen across this structure that it's weird. It seems kind of cliche, but it looks real and the rest of everything looks dull. And you know what I mean? It's just, it's larger than life. And you look at it, it's like, oh, wow, that's just awesome. And that'd be the coolest bed and breakfast. And Pam and I have done paranormal stuff like for the 20 years we've known each other. So we started way back in like 2004 and we'd go to cemeteries. We've gone all over most of the United States to haunted insane asylums and battleships and you name it, everywhere. And we had no clue that this place had the history that it did. To get back to the actual building, and then I'll get into a little bit of how we actually purchased it finally. So the building was actually built by a man named John Swayze. Good old John was a car nurse, and he came out of New York. Well, he was thrown out of New York by the townsfolk because John would roll into town, start up a business, and get a bunch of investors to invest in his business. He was a great salesman. And they would put a bunch of money up, and then old John would just take their money and leave. And this is probably the 1850s. And the 1850s, to put it in perspective, was like 30 years plus, maybe 40 years, before the Wild Wild West shit that you see all the movies about. So lawlessness, I mean, crazy stuff. I mean, you literally could shoot somebody in the face, and as long as you said, well, they robbed me. Oh, okay. Where'd you leave the body? In the ditch. All right, that's good. They'll take care of it. You know, and then you go on your way. I mean, that's just what happened in those days. So John made a bad move in New York, and they threw him out, left his wife behind, which you would think was cruel until it turns out later in the story that she's just as big a piece of shit as he is. But the townsfolk actually put his wife up and cared for her after he stole all their money.
So they felt sorry for her.
They felt sorry for her. And it turns out she left shortly after that and met back up with him out west, and they continued conning the shit out of everybody and just bad things. And she, after he died, she was sued by some of the people he owed money, and she just took them all just straight down. I mean, it was just crazy. Selling his watches, selling everything to get a couple bucks, and just total lying to the judge. And we've got transcripts of all the whole court date, which is just fascinating. A little beyond the scope of this conversation, but it's just amazing what you could get away with talking to a judge in, like, say, 1860 or so. But so John moved into Eaton Rapids and thought, you know, I'm going to find a better class of sucker here. So he rolled into town and decided to build a mansion and then set up a business. And this time, so instead of just setting up a business and getting a few low baller, you know, investments going, he was going to try to join the upper echelon and pull some big money, you know, family money, stuff like that. So he built a building that was just totally state-of-the-art. And to illustrate that, it was finished in 1874, and it took advantage of brand new then radiative steam heat. So there was a big giant boiler and stuff like that. Not a single fireplace in the entire building, which in those days, imagine you have a fireplace in every single room.
Right.
Every room. And you have like a dozen chimneys up top. So not a single one. All of the detail work on the outside of the house, which you can see some pictures up on the Facebook site, was all hand-hammered leaded tin. And the building is what's called a dual-course brick building. So there's a inside wall, and there's a one-foot air gap, and then there's an outside wall. So it's almost two complete buildings. And that makes it for great insulative properties. So we don't hear a lot of road noise, even though we're literally 10 foot away from M99 there. So he did all these amazing things and marched into the hilt and borrowed money and all that stuff. And he set up a hardware store right downtown. And downtown is still a large building that actually has the Swayze block up on the top of it, which is what he started there. Luckily, they found him out before he managed to abscond with all their money and ran his ass out of town. But on the way out of town, he set the building on fire. Now, there was no proof of that, but who the hell else is going to set the building on fire?
Right.
I mean, petty, right? So he did. Now, there was a dentist whose last name was Puffenberger who took over the foreclosed mortgage and had full insurance on the building already at the time of the fire. So they just put it back, and it was just right back to perfect mansion. And it was thus for about 40 years. It was just a mansion that changed hands a couple, two, three times, till 1918. In 1918, a woman named Harriet Chapman, who was a nurse from Charlotte, kind of came up and knocked on the door. And if you think about it, 1918 was the end of the Spanish flu. And 50 million people died in the Spanish flu. So it alarmed a lot of communities. So she came up and says, you know, we really need a local community hospital here in Eaton Rapids. And we'd like to buy your building. It'd be perfect for that. And I don't know what kind of money she threw at him, but all of his shit was out in 30 days. 30 days. And they started reconstruction on the building to build the hospital. To facilitate that, they replaced all the wood trim and painted everything white. They put down tiled floors. And then there was a very specific reason for that. They put down linoleum floors. Now, the tile floors were these small, one-inch-looking hexagonal ceramic tiles that you didn't buy in rolls in 1918. You bought, like, by bulk. You bought wheelbarrows full of these things. And so some poor dude literally had wheelbarrows full and laid those pieces of tile one at a time. They were actually set into 4 inches of concrete, which was set on top of the floorboards. And the reason for that is if you think back to 1918, gurneys for hospital and all that stuff, they were made out of cast iron. So without even a patient on your gurney to roll it around, it probably weighed a couple hundred pounds without anything. And again, if you think about wheels in 1918, the wheels on this kind of stuff were just small steel discs with like a rubber band on the outside. It was no pneumatic, no nothing for cushioning. But so if you rolled that across your floor with, like, say, a patient on it, it would just splinter, destroy everything. So all the floors are really super solid. So you don't hear a lot of footsteps normally. I mean, well, like, there are people making it anyway. We still do hear them. And it's like, well, what the hell is walking up there that I'm hearing that shit? Damn, you know.
Yeah, that's really unusual for a building of that age, because they are normally pretty creaky. Right. But that makes sense.
They usually are. And these are just so solid because, again, they had to reinforce all the floors just to be able to withstand the loads of the gurneys and patients and stuff. So they did that, and then they installed an elevator in the central shaft. See, this is the second empire design, which is a French design as far as the architecture goes. And one of the dictates of that is that you have a wraparound porch, which if you look on the Facebook site, you can see the original photos that we've managed to find of the building in 1918. And there's this just fabulous porch. It goes all the way around the building, single story. And then it has large tower in the middle. And the large tower was literally just there so you could go up and spy on your damn neighbors. I mean, it was an observation.
Let's be honest.
But that's where they put the elevator. And as a hospital, it was really way ahead of the curve. Harriet Chapman, for some weird reason, had either been in the future or just had ideas that they didn't know about. In 1918, we didn't really know a lot about bacteria yet and why this patient who had similar ailment to the next patient lived and the other one died. Well, we didn't know about bacteria and how much you should be cleansing and all this stuff. But Harriet Chapman was way ahead of that. All the woodwork was wiped down a couple times daily. Any physicians that worked on anything had to actually scrub and cleanse themselves multiple times for each patient, the whole thing. They would not deliver your baby if you did not take a bath as you were admitted to the hospital. If you refused, you got to walk down the road. Didn't matter if that baby's poking his turtle head out or not, they're just not letting you in the building. And there's a reason for that. Think about it again, 1918, there was no such thing as showers. Right. There was a bathtub, and families were giant, and they used the same freaking bathtub full of water for everybody in the family, so don't be the 13th kid, because you're probably not going to be clean when you're done. So they had a remarkable record of having live births that didn't die. And another neat aspect is they would let the husband be in the birthing room and watch the procedure, which was actually totally unheard of in 1918.
Yes.
Totally unheard of.
Wow.
Women would come from other states to have their baby here so their husband could participate. They had a remarkable record with the success of that. They had one of the first X-ray machines in the state, which for a tiny little burg like this was unheard of as well. But Harry Chapman's family was big in coal. And if you think about it again, 1918, coal was the shit. That was industry. That was all of industry. That was the biggest thing there is. That's where the money was. It wasn't really in oil production yet, because there weren't that many combustion engine cars really around to push the oil production.
Was it Harriet Chapman's family's money then that paid for this building and the hospital and everything?
It absolutely was,
okay.
Yes. And another thing that people don't realize about nurses in 1918 was nursing as a profession was thought of just about sideways to prostitution. And there's a reason for that that unfortunately haunts us to this very day. And if you think about racism and class wars and stuff we have going on even now, think about 1918. Think about maybe your daughter or your wife having to be close and intimate to all classes of people. Didn't matter what color they were, didn't matter where they're from, didn't matter what they did. If they came in sick to that hospital, that nurse would have to change their bedpan, get up close to them, wipe down their faces, tend to their wounds, all this stuff. That was a little too close and personal for a lot of high roller types in those days, or even normal casual people. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh no, that's not our kind of folk. You can't touch them. So her family frowned on the fact that she wanted to be a nurse and run a hospital, but she stuck to it. And she bankrolled this, not only financing it, but headed it, the whole thing all by herself, which today would be a phenomenal thing for a woman to achieve. In those days, it was literally science. It was fiction. It was just like, you can't have pulled off that much. I mean, really, you just can't have done it. And she did.
Was it ever known as the Chapman Hospital?
It actually was. At first, it was the Harriet Chapman Hospital. And if you look on the Facebook page, there is a couple pictures that show the old building with the front porch still attached. And you can just make out on the top, the whole round part of the front porch, the Harriet Chapman Hospital.
Then at some point, though, she brought in a couple doctors and it ended up named after one of them?
Well, and that's the thing. She attracted a lot of attention, doctor-wise, and got some very good talent. She attracted a Francis Blanchard and then also Charles Stimson, both of whom had graduated together at U of M and were kind of pals. And Dr. Blanchard was the poor, unfortunate soul who had the problem with the elevator, which we'll get to in just a few minutes. But all three of the founders died in this building. They all died of various things in their own hospital, which is kind of tragic too. But I mean, I guess if you got to go, you got to go. But yeah, so the hospital was very popular. Almost 4,000 people were born in this building.
Oh, that's a lot.
Think about how big. I mean, I know you haven't actually physically seen it, but it's really not that big. We have estimated, just due to records and research that Pam has mostly done, that probably 3,000 or better died in this hospital. And that's a lot of energy coming and going. So, especially in a small structure.
Yeah.
And think about how it was created, and it was created under false pretenses, and there's a facade to rip people off and other things. The building actually has kind of an attitude. At the moment, it's very benevolent. It's never been malevolent as far as we've been able to tell, but it's very, I won't say touchy, but it's very susceptible to other people's attitudes as they come in. Well, we have ghost hunters come in. I know it sounds like bullshit, but I want them to say, I don't care what it is. Don't be mad at anybody when you come here to investigate this house. I don't care who you're mad at. If you come in here with a bad attitude, the house is going to punish you, and you're not going to like it. You'll have bad things will happen, and it will turn ugly. If you come in here happy-go-lucky and you just want to explore, and hey, the truth is out there, and I'd like to, you know, talk to the other side and all that stuff, then the house will do tricks for you, and you'll have a good time. You'll get evidence. You'll see neat stuff. I mean, all this stuff will work out, and you'll be part of it. And we've had teams that have fucked around and found out and had that happen to them. We had a young team come in. They had a real young member, and they were all on the sidewalk smoking, so we don't allow that kind of stuff inside for obvious reasons. Fire. And she would just dog him on the last place he'd gone. Can't remember where it's at, but somewhere in Michigan. It was, I think, in a state asylum or some sort of a place like that. Oh, that place was terrible. Nothing happened, and we paid all that money. Blah, blah. This place better be better than that freaking thing. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, on and on, just bitching the building. You haven't even walked in the building yet, and you are already just throwing that stuff out there. And so that night, she's investigating it. So we get a call about 3:30 a.m. She's all going, oh, my God, my face got bit. And sure as shit, I mean, human bite mark all right on the side of her cheek, right under her cheekbone. You know, you can't fake that shit because, well, you know, that's when your team member bit you in the face. And big scratches all up and down her back. I mean, bloody scratches, not just light ones. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. You know, told you that things can happen. Oh, no, it's great. We've never had so much fun. But it bit your fucking face. I know, but it's great. We want to come back. It bit your fucking face. And nope, good to go. I said, all right, well, if we're good, I've got to sleep here, you know. I mean, carry on. Do what you got to do. And just stuff like that. So it really does happen if you don't mind your manners when you come through this house. And again, if you're just here to investigate and you want to learn and you want to be part of it and all that stuff, the house is great and awesome, and you'll never have the hair raised on the back of your neck, but you will see things and you'll experience things. And it's that stuff is pretty hard to debunk. I mean, like the stuff that I had you look there on the laser table. It's really hard to debunk that when I'm standing there with both hands in camera view and shit flies around the table without me looking at it.
You literally see things moving, and you're both of your hands are
right
on something else, so it's not you.
I know, right? In the round room, I have a laser etcher, which is a really neat device, and I do artwork with it and all sorts of cool stuff. And I make, like, stiffs and hospital things to sell at the trade show with the Paragons and stuff. And so I was getting ready to do some wood etchings with it and opening up a package of wood, and I didn't have something to open it with, so I walked away from the table. And as I was walking back, a small chunk of metal, which is small, but it's metal, so it probably weighs a good pound and a half or so, flipped over all by itself as I was coming back to the table. And I was still maybe 2-3 feet away from the table, but you could see me in the camera frame. And I heard it, but I didn't actually see what had moved. So having heard this metallic clunk, I kind of looked down, and there's a tape measure there, because we're always under construction. It's our own Winchester mansion. I kind of picked up the tape measure and says, yeah, that's not the sound I heard. And I looked and said, well, gee, that piece of metal wasn't sitting like that. That's odd. So I picked it up, kind of put it back down, and yeah, okay, whatever. You know, I mean, and like I've said, we kind of get used to this stuff because we're living here right now. And so I go to keep open up the wood. And then as I have both hands on the stack of wood right there, trying to get the plastic off of it, on the left-hand side, a small aluminum scalpel jumps up in the air and flies about a foot and a half over to a pile of slate tiles, which are stone. And it's a metallic aluminum scalpel, so it's not like magnetic fields could have done anything. And it just jumped right in front of me. And I saw that. I looked out and said, oh. And so I kind of picked up the scalpel, looked at it, and kind of put it down out of the way where it wouldn't, you know, stab me. I mean, who knows what's moving this shit. And then just kind of went right back on about my business. And so I opened up the wood, did what I had to do, and then went up to talk to Pam, who was up in the upper floor of the Stimson Hospital, and said, hey, man, the weirdest shit just went on down in the round room. And she says, well, did you check the security footage? I said, oh, crap, no, I didn't. And so when I looked, sure enough, it had caught all of that footage. And so that film's actually in the Stimson Hospital Facebook site where you can access the video. And it's only about 29 seconds long, I think. But if you look at it and watch it a couple times, it's pretty hard to say, oh, some weird shit didn't happen there. Because right. You can see the stuff flip over, and I'm not anywhere near it. I mean, my levitation skills are just a little limited right now.
I want to kind of take a little bit of a detour. So you and your wife both have an interest in paranormal and paranormal investigations, which my guess is why you are attracted to the Stimson Hospital. But how did you guys end up owning it?
We had drove by it a few times and just remarked that, man, that's such a cool structure. You know, that'd make a great bed and breakfast. And you can tell how old it is just by the architecture.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
That's the fact that it's a second empire. You don't see that. You see Victorian homes, and they're cool. And I love the Victorian style, but you don't see the second empire style. They're very, very rare. They're some down in, like, say, the Georgia, the Southern Belt states. They're a little more prevalent, but not a lot. Because, again, I mean, they were built 150 years ago. But so one day we're driving by, and there was a freaking for sale sign. And I said, oh, my God, it's for sale. So luckily enough, the realtor who listed it is literally across the street. And so we stopped in to talk to her, and we said, man, we'd just love to put an offer down that place. And she said, okay, well, that's cool. And so we go away thinking, oh, this is going to be great, and go to talk to the credit union, get our finances around, and everything's all going to be cool. And so we got everything's all approved and ready to go. And so we call her up like just a few days, I think it was the next week. Said, hey, we've been to the credit union, and we're ready to come back up and talk. I think we're going to do this. She says, oh, I'm sorry, but we're closing on that Thursday. Wait, what? And so some investor had come in from out of town and just snatched up like four or five properties in town and just literally thrown stupid money at it all. Had everything all signed. Everything was all inspected. All the stuff was done. Everything but the final closing papers were signed, and they were ready to go, and they were going to close that Thursday. And so Pam and I go, oh. Well, and it was a little disheartening. We thought, well, I mean, I guess it wasn't meant to be, you know. Well, something will come out. We'll find something sometime. And, you know, that had been cool and all. But, and so we just figured, nope, we're done here. And about 2 weeks after that, I get a phone call from good old Nancy across the street there. And she says, hey, well, this is the first time in 45 years of my career as a realtor that this happened. And so that guy just disappeared. No trace, no nothing, just gone.
Kind of shady, like the original builder of the house.
You think? Yeah. So, and so that was just weird as shit. She said, well, still interested? Well, fuck yeah, we already got our shit in a row. I mean, let's go. So sure enough, we came up and put the offer in, and we own the place now. And that was its own weird bit, because the place had been so run down. I mean, it was turned into apartments in the 70s, and now it was just shitty apartments. So there's domestic disturbances all the time. One of the tenants was just a total bad hoarder, worse than any hoarder show you've ever seen. And we had to evict her. A young couple had lived in the very back apartment, which is just a giant apartment, 1,600 square feet and three stories. I mean, big apartment.
Oh, that's huge.
And they had like three really big dogs, like three kids, and they had just all of them shit the world and destroyed everything and ate the closet doors and just, I mean, literally destroyed it. And that's why they wouldn't let us in to look at it. When we finally did see it, it was like, oh, my God, I just want to set it on fire. And so we ended up sinking almost $12,000 into that apartment just to make it an apartment, not to turn it into something like our bed and breakfast or to restore anything. That was literally just to make it up to code to where someone could legally live there. And I mean, all the way down to the bare wood. And then finally we had it all set up. We thought, okay, by the time we kicked everybody out and we had to evict the woman in the middle, all of the tenants you know, I've all had various bizarre experiences here, and people that even just stayed with friends on and off through the decades that said, oh yeah, I won't go back in that place. And even when we were trying to rent it out, we would have people that wanted to stop by and see the apartment. They'd pull up right in the middle of the road out there, and they'd look, and they'd stop and look, and they'd say, you mean it's that place? Oh, fuck no. And they just drive off. So it'd be a no-show. And so we finally put in the lease that says, yeah, it's really haunted. Nope, I'm not going to give your deposit back at 2:30 a.m. because you got spooked by the ghost tonight, because we told you there was one. So if you don't, if you're not cool with that, you really don't need him to be staying here. We did finally get a really good renter in the back, and that's the only one we have left. He gets along really good with the ghost. They get along good with him. I mean, he'll wake up in the middle of the night with somebody sitting on the end of his bed. And when he reaches over and flips on light, there's a butt impression on the end of his bed. Ooh. That's still there.
Is it just you and your family and that renter?
Yes, it is. I mean, our house burned down about a year and a half ago down to Springport,
personal
residence. And so we've been fighting the insurance company and all that stuff, trying to get that put back.
I can't imagine.
Deal with the insurance. Just, they screwed everybody, and they screwed us so hard. And so we've been living here in the interim because, well, we have a building, at least that or be out on the road, you know.
Right.
Living here has its own weird bit of fun that goes with it. For one, it really reduced the amount of work we could do on the place because we still have active investigations nearly every weekend. I mean, we're usually booked out months in advance. So we have special events like public ghost hunts where we have a bunch of newbies come in and we have a whole bunch of ghost gear and equipment and things. And we show them how it all works. And then we just let them wander around in the dark and run into each other and scare the shit out of each other and have a great time. And a good time is had by all. I mean, it's a great time. The house loves people that don't know what's going on. I mean, it does crazy shit. And it's just the most active thing you've ever seen. And then every once in a great while, we'll have a ghost team come in that thinks they're all that. And then it won't do shit for them because it's all about the attitude around here.
Oh,
and
so
I tell them that right from the get-go. Nope, you better be nice. You better play nice. You better just be interested in stuff and curious. And if you do that, the house is your buddy. It'll do stuff for you. You'll see cool shit. You'll experience cool shit. And that's just what you get. So, but yeah, it was kind of a bit of a trial getting to the point where we're at, where we only have the one tenant, and then us living here. Youngest child, Adam, who just turned 12 just last month, he still sees fully formed, full torso things all the time. He'll see nurses, although he won't know that's what it was. He'll just come down and say, I just saw this really weird old lady walk by with a little white hat as I was stepping out of the bathroom upstairs, and she just walked right past my face. Well, what'd you do? I shut the door. Well, good move there.
He wouldn't recognize her as a nurse because that's not how nurses dress now. You know,
right,
with that
but
little
I mean, you
white
think about
hat.
1918 and how nurses dressed in those days, though. So it wouldn't look like a nurse nowadays, right, other than the weird little tiny white hat they wore, you know. He's still not to the point in life where experience has jaded his other senses. I mean, as human beings, we're very intuitive. And if you're lucky enough to be able to follow your first intuition about anything, 99.9% of the time, it was right. You know, what we do is we quash that down because we don't want to believe what we don't think we were trained or, you know, oriented to believe. And so we don't see stuff that's right in front of our face because that can't be what I just thought I saw. I'm fairly open, having done this with Pam for 20 years. So we're pretty open to that. But man, I wish I could see a nurse go walking by.
You might just happen. one day out of the blue, we still
see a lot of shadow figures of various sizes. We see children's size shadow figures, and other things like that. So we still see a lot of phenomena. We hear a lot of phenomena. We'll wake up in the middle of the night and you'll hear a conversation going on right outside the bedroom door. And it's like a crowd of people all talking and carrying on. And you can hear the individual voices, but you can't quite make out the words.
Yeah.
You can't quite hear. There's nothing intelligible there. It's just mumbling noises. But it's definitely different noises to be female and male. And it's just like, okay, well, I had to go to the bathroom, but I think I'll hold it now. The bathroom's right outside our door. And that's the same bathroom. If you walk out and nurse walks by, well, good thing I already peed or I'd be doing that right now.
Let's go way back because you touched on it briefly about Dr. Blanchard. I hope I said that correctly. Blanchard or
no,
Blanchard?
No, that's correct. Yeah, Dr. Francis Blanchard. So good old Francis, he actually had a pretty bad end of life. And by that, I mean he was very unlucky. He was actually a very good surgeon. His specialist in gastro, he was a gastroenterologist. And he was highly sought after. And he was had a family practice in a neighboring town. And so his first wife died in surgery under his knife and with a gastric issue. So it's not embarrassing. That's tragic. And how
that's
do you not
horrible.
Blame yourself? Turns out his second wife died under his knife with their unborn child. Same kind of issue.
Oh my God.
Same kind of issue. Complications due to surgery. So after that, and that was tragic enough, he got hit by a train in his Model T. So he almost died, was in critical condition for like 6 months. Basically, after all that, he says, you know, I think I'll just move. This town is bad luck. And so he actually came to the Stimson Hospital. He had heard through a friend that Dr. Stimson, whom he had graduated with, was going to set up residence here. And Harriet Chapman invited him in because she was still kind of running the show. It was still the Harriet Chapman Hospital at that time. So he kind of joined the roster here. And 6 months into his tenure, as he was finishing up surgery on the third floor, which is no longer there, by the way, and there was a reason they did it on the third floor. In 1918, there really wasn't a lot of high-powered lighting that you could use for intricate surgeries. So they had skylights in the ceiling in a variety of places. And it, literally, you would move the patient underneath a strong sunbeam, and, okay, you've got 30 minutes to do whatever you got to do, or we're going to lose our light here. So he had finished surgery. It was right around 8 p.m. We found out he was a death certificate that we found. And just taking notes and walking to the elevator like a doctor will do, not paying attention to anything else because they're always busy. And when he went to step in the elevator, it was parked in maintenance mode because it wasn't there. And he just stepped off into space and fell straight down into the elevator pit, landing on his head, which he died almost instantly. Dr. Stimson was actually down in the morgue, which is about 10 foot from where the elevator would let off on the basement floor. And so he heard and even probably felt Dr. Blanchard land.
Oh, my God. I couldn't imagine.
And so he rushed over there real quick, just in time for Dr. Blanchard to recognize him, because you can see it in his eyes that they kind of lit up a little bit. And but since he had landed literally head first, he couldn't speak. He couldn't, you know, gesticulate anything. And then he passed right then. Dr. Stimson saw the last light fade, and that was the end of Dr. Blanchard. Interestingly enough, in the days after the hospital was closed down and they finally turned it into apartments, families with young children that moved in would have some pretty interesting stories. And the young kids who would have their imaginary friend, well, for some odd reason, they weren't named like Joey or Bobby or Sue or anything like that, Barbie. It was always some form of Blanchard. And this is the 70s, so there's no social media. There's no nothing. There's no nobody took out an ad in the paper. And these are multiple families many years apart with the same exact thing and their same toddlers coming up with the same name of their friend that likes to play with them. Because Dr. Blanchard loved kids. He wanted to have kids. And you can find this stuff out just by doing a search on either Harriet Chapman Hospital or Stimson Hospital. It's in a lot of like the Michigan haunted records and stuff like that. And we kind of found that out as we were doing a little research when we first bought the building. And holy shit, what did we buy? And then we thought, okay, well, not just bed and breakfast, but a paranormal bed and breakfast. So, you know, ghost teams can come in, sleep in a 150-year-old room and antique furniture, go out and investigate, come back in, nap for a little bit, go investigate somewhere. I mean, whatever they want to do, you know. So, and we do actually hope to, within the next 2 years or so, if we can actually get out of here and live in our house again, we'll have it finished up and have the rooms opened up so that we can have the bed and breakfast functioning. Because everyone in this town just about that was born before 1957 was actually born in this building. And every time we talk to someone, they say, oh, man, I'd love to come stay there. You just let me know when it's open. Because they were born here. They don't care about ghosts. They just want to reconnect with their past. They were born in there. They'd be neat to go stay a night in a room right by where they came into this world. You know, I mean, how often do you have the chance to do that?
Never. With your background and your wife's background in the paranormal, I'm sure that you have had lots of experiences, different locations, you know, because you probably investigated for years and years. Did anything really prepare you for this particular building? But are there things that have surprised you about it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I got to admit, I was pretty shocked at the whole poltergeist stuff and some of the things I've heard and seen. We've investigated a lot of neat places, but it was still nothing as visceral as the stuff we've experienced here. And honestly, to this point in time, we've never actually investigated this building. Now, there's been a couple times where I've set up a camera just to catch something offhand, you know, and we have security cameras everywhere because we have a large medical museum that we're building. Because, I mean, haunted hospital, you got to have cool medical shit.
Yeah.
So we've been collecting for like 6 years, and a lot of this stuff is just stupid expensive. So you really don't want some ghost hunter to think, oh, hey, man, here's a souvenir. So we have security cameras everywhere. Just a few years ago, on the 99th year anniversary of Dr. Blanchard's death, I put a sensitive camera, a night camera, up in the very attic. We kind of bored through the ceiling and got up into the crawl space. See, the third floor burned down in 1976. A fire started in the third floor and burned for like 4 hours before anybody even noticed. Since it was a Second Empire design, it had what's called mansard-style roof. The mansard-style roof dictates slate tiles for the side, a sloping slate tile roofing, and then metal railings on all the top of it. And I mean, slate is stone. So it literally burned for 4 hours and it couldn't escape till it finally blew the windows out. And then one of the neighbors said, "Oh my God, that smoke, that place is on fire." Well, it's not on fire. It's burned to a core from the inside out. And they finally put it out, and they couldn't put the third floor back because there was nobody that knew anything about Second Empire French architecture. They just, and the city was going, either you get it back or we'll turn it into a parking lot. I mean, you've got till midsummer. So they did what they could to just turn it into a bunch of quick apartments again, and then put a low slope regular roof on it and called it good. Well, under that roof is still the third floor. When you go up there, all the original tile floors up there are immaculate. So I put this camera up there, and since I've been a studio musician my entire life, I've also owned a number of recording studios, built quite a few recording studios. And so I have just all manner of crazy audio gear. And so I put a small portable recorder up there that can record from 5 hertz to 50,000 hertz. Now, human spectrum, we cover maybe 20 to 20 if you're young and don't listen to rock music a lot. So 5 to 50 is well outside of that. And that's another little clip that you'll find on the Simpson Hospital page. And that one, there was no visual anomalies, but you get this most bizarre audio anomaly you've ever heard. And I can't call it an EVP because it's not voices, but literally it makes some of the oddest sounds you've ever heard. And there's nothing that moves up in the attic. I mean, it's been bolted up for decades. And there's no mechanic. There's no water pipes up there. There's nothing but wiring up there. There's no doors. There's no animals. I mean, it's sealed. You can hear on the recording like muted cars going by. And then all of a sudden, these bizarre metallic clanks that sound like something right in front of the microphones. And then it goes off sounding like a ratchet. And then you hear the ratchet thing again. And you hear this huge squeak like somebody metal on metal or something, you know. And one of the mediums says, "Well, you know what that sounds like? Sounds like somebody opened the door, stepped in, shut the door, and then engaged it down, because then the squeal would have heard with the metal cables on the metal drums that would have let the elevator go up and down." And that's the only thing that I ever heard anybody say that made any sense at all. And if you listen to that once with that in the back of your mind, it's like, oh my God, except for the elevator hadn't been there for 40 plus years when I recorded that.
Do you know how far into the video that sound is?
About 20 seconds. I mean, okay. Go ahead and listen to it if you want.
I got it pulled up. Let's go. This is about 15 seconds in.
Yeah, it'll only take another few seconds and you'll hear it.
That is so creepy. Isn't it amazing?
I've never heard an audio clip like that. There was, and you got to figure, the building was completely empty. There was nobody here at that time. Not a single soul in the entire building. It was completely empty. And that was just slightly after when the doctor would have fell to his death, which obviously he didn't take the elevator down. He took the shortcut.
As soon as I heard that, I got goosebumps everywhere, like on my arms and my legs.
But isn't that weird, though? And once you listen to it, then if you think about the description, what the medium says, like, man, I can see that. I can see that sounding just like that. Again, next time you watch an old-fashioned movie and they have an elevator and you see the big scissor-looking door thing and they open up, it sounds just like that, you know? And so it's weird like that. And that's, and around here, anniversaries kind of have a weird thing. So, you know, as we're restoring the place, we're restoring floors too. And Pam was actually up in what we call the birthing room, which is directly above Dr. Stimson's office. It was Dr. Blanchard's office until, of course, he left the building. And then Dr. Stimson kind of took over running the hospital. So he was at his office. So Pam's upstairs chipping away one day. Nobody else in the building. I mean, we would spend most of our waking hours coming up here to try to work on the place, even when we were living down in our house. And so she's sitting down there and she keeps hearing weird noises and paper shuffling and footsteps going downstairs. If you go right outside the birthing room, that's where the elevator shaft was. Well, that was turned into stairs in the 70s. So it's a big winding staircase now, but it is still the elevator shaft. So it transmits sound well. And directly at the bottom of that, off to one side, that was Dr. Simpson's office. So the noise was winding up that elevator shaft and right into the room where she was at. And she heard paper shuffling and somebody walking. Usually one of the things I like to do to the ghost hunters and the tour guests that come through is I'll walk back and forth on Stimson off this floor for them with my regular tennis shoes on, and it's silent. You can't hear a thing because it's tile set into 4 inches of concrete. I mean, it's solid. You can't hear anything. So she did this and listened for a minute, kind of came downstairs to look around, make sure somebody hadn't broken in to do something stupid, and then said, whatever. Went back upstairs and kind of worked for another hour or so, and then called it quits. And they finally had settled down, and she didn't hear it anymore. So before she actually wrapped up and came home, she looked up on her phone to see if there's anything pertinent to that day. Because, again, we've experienced odd things on subsequent dates that tend to mirror what happened back in the day. And as it just turns out, that was the exact anniversary of the day that Dr. Simpson died of a heart attack in his desk doing paperwork downstairs in his office. And that was only discovered after she experienced the phenomenon. Didn't know, didn't have a clue. Dr. Simpson had a heart attack earlier that year. And his physician says, "You're killing yourself, dude. You got to stop this, you know, mellow out." But I mean, doctors, this, yeah, whatever. But she heard it. And if you think about it, okay, what kind of shoes did they wear in 1918? Big old shiny ass tar sole shoes you could actually hear on that kind of floor. You wouldn't hear anybody modern walking back and forth on that floor. But if somebody from that era walked on that floor, you would hear them walking back and forth. And so she heard footsteps. She heard papers rustling and shuffling and stuff. And he died literally right in that exact spot, doing paperwork at his desk. And so that's just what she heard, but she didn't know until after she looked it up, and then she's, "Oh, it's time to go, going home." So, and that's the kind of weird stuff that just is not quite coincidental around here, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, that's just, no, you can't stretch my imagination that far.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Chris Sturgill about the haunted Stimson Hospital. In the next episode, we'll talk about his haunted objects collection. For more information on tours, ghost hunts, and investigations, visit their Facebook page. Just search Stimson Hospital. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free. Or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Find everything there. It's also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thanks for listening.